Hello, welcome to The Addict's Advocate, a podcast geared towards the suffering addict and those in recovery. This podcast does not provide any medical advice. No material on this podcast is intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare professional with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen. And never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on this podcast. Enjoy the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome again to another episode of The Addict's Advocate. I am your host, Dusty Dean, and it is my pleasure to introduce a friend of mine by the name of Kevin. How are you doing tonight, bud?
I'm doing well. Thanks for asking. Good to be here.
Good. Hey, I appreciate you you being on, and I know that your recovery has been fairly long. And I'm just curious, how many days is it for you?
Oh Lord, God, I stopped counting the days, but I'm going to hit my 10 months on nice. March 4th. Yeah,
good for you.
Yeah, it's been a good 10 months.
Good deal. So why don't you give us a little background on yourself, how it all came to be, how you realized you needed help.
Yeah. I mean, I guess just going back to kid time, grew up in a, middle-class family, loving parents. There wasn't really any trauma or drama in the household, normal family. Working dad, and then an at-home mom. And life was kind of normal. I know at an early age, way before any substance entered my body, I was dialed pretty high as an anxious kid. And I also struggled with some learning disabilities, fell behind in some classes. And I, it's kind of like I was fine inside my circle, but the minute I was in the outside world and around, especially new people, new situations, yeah, my anxiety was pretty high. Father was a drinker, very functional, but when I'd called, although he never admitted it, an alcoholic. Mother drank, but wasn't a big drinker. A couple glasses of wine every now and then. And, on the other, back beyond that in the family, there was a grandpa who was a big, big drinker, again, functionally as a chemist. He was making his gin in the bathtub when the prohibition years were around. Yeah, kind of a funny guy, but crazy parties and, all the stories. So kind of grew up as a kid with the notion that, alcohol was in the family. It was okay. But yeah, moving into my teen years, I had my first sip and I noticed immediately it was like a huge release in terms of anxiety. And suddenly I could joke around, laugh, feel comfortable. And it was all fun and games. And it became kind of a normal part of my life. Fell into some friends that loved drinking too. Moved on to college. Kind of lived the normal party life of a college person. And then after college, getting into the career. After work parties, like drinking was always a part of my life. Lost my father at an early age in my mid-20s. He died of cancer, and from diagnosis to death, it was like 3 months. So it went pretty quick. I remember after that happening, my relationship with alcohol became a way to escape. I guess it kind of always has. If you go back to, again, my childhood, I was very anxious, and alcohol is a good way to just kind of release, lay back, and party. But now I was in a sad state, dealing with a lot of emotional grief over losing my father. And it became kind of a go-to whenever life got tough. Moving on, jobs, careers, meeting my wife, getting married, having kids, buying a home. Anytime stressors came in, the drink was the cure. If it was a good time we were celebrating, of course, the drink has always been there for that. And then boredom. Yeah, boredom. If I was really bored and not much to do, it was a good way to pass time. So that's how I rolled. But, I was warned as a kid, there's alcoholism in the family and be careful. you know, once you're an alcoholic, you got to stop drinking forever, which was kind of funny because it kind of seemed like that's your punishment. You can't drink anymore. But that said and done, you know, I was always conscious. I'm like, yeah, I got to watch my drinking, right? And I tell myself the lies where I was probably an alcoholic all my life, drinking way too much. But I would, you know, see someone pass out at a bar or do something real stupid. At least I'm not like that, you know, I'm not that bad. Life went on. Yeah. Anyway, as I was approaching my late 40s, I really kind of became concerned in terms of health wise. I knew I was drinking way too much emotionally. Like every time something tough came up, man, I had a hard time. I really did. And you know, that led to more drinking. And when I wasn't drinking, I was miserable. I couldn't deal with it. And as I moved in my 50s, I made a genuine effort to really cut down on my drinking, say I could control it. Went through a month here, month there, dryuary after the holidays. Oh yeah, I'm in control. But once COVID hit, drinking turned up. You know, the volume really turned up. Suddenly I'm in a space where happy hour could start a lot earlier. It was really boring. Couldn't go anywhere. So passing time with alcohol. And that being said, I really kind of started controlling my life where I was kind of that guy passing out on the couch at 7, you know, p.m. at night, missing out on movie time, not wanting to go out and do things because I didn't want to drive. And yeah, anyway, fast forward, I just really decided to quit. It was going pretty good and had a really bad binge. I think it was funny because when I quit and went a long time, like you'd think you could just have a couple beers and yeah, that worked. But man, I started hitting the bottle. And my mom, you know, a little bit of backstory, fell. She's 80 years old at the time. This was probably about a year and a half ago. And she broke her jaw, shattered it up in like 3 pieces. And she lived by herself. She had dementia, early stages, we thought, but it was much worse. And I had to take care of her 1 week at a time, leave the family and trade in time with my brother. And anyway, while I was taking care of her here, I'm supposed to be taking care of her. I went on a binge and passed out for over 24 hours. Didn't feed her. Didn't do anything. My wife was out of town at the time, was texting me. I wasn't responding. And she drove over concerned, like, what's going on? And anyway, she found me on the bed, passed out. So what are we going to do? It wasn't a new conversation. She knew I was trying. And I ended up going to rehab, going in the hospital first, going to rehab. And that's when I really started my first time in AA. You know, I do AA, but rehab, like professional help around the whole thing. So I mean, kind of that's the story that led me to my recovery. Where it's a real recovery. I feel it's sustained. I feel I have tools. Yeah. I have steps. I have a sponsor. So,
yeah. You know, there's a lot of times, right? We will beat ourselves up to smithereens, right? And as long as there's no collateral damage, we'll keep doing it to ourselves. But as soon as we bring somebody we love and care about into that mix of our addiction, it's definitely a game changer. I would agree.
Yeah, absolutely. When you start seeing some of the ground shaking below you on all the things you took for granted and knew you loved, but yeah, what you were doing was affecting their well-being. Yeah, it's quite a change in perception at that point where it was for me. Yeah.
You had, with obviously being sober now, have you worked on processing that mental health, you know, aspects that you were obviously trying to medicate?
Absolutely. I mean, a big thing is outside of a program, the mental health aspect. I had in the past, you know, had a therapist, had a shrink, and we were working on that. I always thought I was just dialed high and I just needed to medicate over that. And on top of the prescription drugs, I was drinking and smoking weed and, you know, mixing all that together certainly wasn't the answer. But yeah. since my recovery, there was an aftercare program I got in. It wasn't a residential, but, you know, time spent in groups. I'm still in that. You know, here I am nearly a year later. I love it. I love having a therapist and meeting with the therapist once a week. I love groups where people struggling from mental, you know, health disorders and substance abuse and sharing stories and getting kind of the science behind it on top of, you know, what I do outside of that, my program, which is, you know, fellowship, spiritual, all that stuff.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I've found that, you know, obviously having a community has been so beneficial to my recovery. Mm-hmm. And also the mental health piece, you know, you get into it for so long and you don't know what came first, you know, the chicken or the egg. And
exactly. And I always ask that question now, I know. Yeah.
Right. So I think it's, and unfortunately, right, it's a circular issue, right? I mean, alcohol and addiction, you know, to substances doesn't help the cause at all. It just makes things worse slowly but mm-hmm. surely. So, but if you are underlying with issues, then yeah, you're basically a tidal wave slowly building up. I tell you, for me, that was, you know, it was the addiction, but it was the mental health that was, I think, the bigger mm-hmm. catalyst for me over all of it. In SVR, I had so much opportunity to really address, you know, anxiety, depression, and potentially, you know, some bipolar wrapped up in there. And, mm-hmm. and I had been self-medicating for so long that, you know, I forgot yeah. that, you know, this is the reason why I was doing it. This is the way I functioned. Right. And I justified it. The alcohol was way worse than, you know, using marijuana, because I'd used marijuana for periods where I wasn't drinking. And, mm-hmm. you know, but of course, you know, I was still chasing it, right? I'd get my fix and then I'd be, you know, 3 or 4 hours later, be like, okay, well, here it comes again. So I need to go get my fix again, right? And sure. now it's, you know, I'm at the point where it's like I take Lexapro for an antidepressant and I take Seroquel to deal with anxiety and the bipolar. And I tell you, I'm so present now. I feel good. I don't ruminate. I mean, it's like been a godsend. SVR with the dual diagnosis and with the ability to manipulate medicines has been such mm-hmm. a blessing. I mean, and that's why it's interesting, because I was in an NA meeting over the weekend, and I've been kind of talking to some new people, trying to see if anybody would be interested in being a part of this show, right? And one of them that's, you know, 30 years sober, you know, has asked me why I don't have a sponsor yet. And it's interesting because for me, I still go to an aftercare program once a week. I obviously have the alumni with SVR now, but I was in an IOP as well after SVR for a good, you know, 36 sessions. And I'm still connected with all those people. And some of those people have even graced my show. And that's been just such a huge, huge thing for me, because the irony is too, is that I'm a faithful man and I truly believe in God. So when I first started reading all the 12 steps, I'm like, well, wow, this is kind of like, this is stuff that I try to practice just in my faith, you know, outside of obviously, mm-hmm. you know, even enduring, you know, the struggles with addiction. But he was, you know, he was pretty adamant about me getting a sponsor, you know, and working these steps and everything. And I actually had a friend of mine say, he goes, well, you know what? He goes, you're doing step 12 right now with you're of service right now with doing this right for people. And, mm-hmm. and I was like, yeah, I guess I am. And that was the, you know, one of the catalysts I felt that this show was so important, was because, you know, people don't realize the great people that are struggling with things that are similar to the things that they're struggling. And yet they're just too afraid to step foot, you know, into that realm. What do you think has been one of the most valuable things in your rehabilitation education?
Well, I mean, I guess a couple things. One was a solid foundation in the beginning. I mean, we both went to the same rehab center, SVR. I got a lot out of that, and I wanted a lot out of that. You know, I was 100% ready to not do it on my own anymore. And the tools and the processing and everything they gave on top of a really nice location and staff. I mean, it was definitely a huge boost for me in getting out what I call the, you know, out in the wild, where, you know, you're out on your own. So that was huge. It's a solid foundation. That being said, for me, sustaining that, I was definitely, I heard you're going to NA in town. Those are meetings, right? There's a fellowship. Unfortunately, I really like the NA pro, you know, the meetings we went to Willow Glen over in SVR. The meetings in Livermore just didn't, or where I'm from, I just gave myself up, but yeah, from Livermore. But anyway, the meetings weren't fitting into times that worked well for me. So I ended up finding AA as a recovery place, and it's been a lot of things that AA gives. I do have a sponsor. The sponsor that I have now was actually a person that someone at the center had provided me a number to, and I was having a hard time finding someone I was comfortable with. I mean, because I had a lot of questions. The 12 steps for me were brand new. I was raised Catholic, but fell away from the church most of my life and never really became, like, you know, a spiritual God person, especially in like a religion type sense. So I had questions about that. The words I understood, but from reading them, comprehending them from a book, I find that my sponsor is so pivotal in helping me through the program. He's got 26 years on his belt. And a lot of wisdom behind that. And he calls me out on things, which I like. I do. I mean, you kind of be ready to get called out and don't take it as someone's getting on me or I didn't do something right. You know, that's wisdom they're sharing. That like when I was busy at work and falling out, you know, away from some of the meetings I had been attending that he attends to, and he's like, why aren't you showing up? You know, I'm kind of concerned. I'm busy. It's not an excuse. You got to put time into it. You know, if you don't, it's going to go stale and you're going to feel good now, but there's going to be a time where you don't. You know, that's good advice, you know? So yeah, I think sponsorship, it's not for everyone, but for me, it's definitely something that has definitely opened my eyes, and he gives me service opportunities to suggest them kind of to get involved. So with him, I feel like I have someone who has my back and helps me through it, because this is my first time in a program. Whereas before, I just was like, yeah, I drink too much, I'm going to quit and white knuckle it, and then I fail, and then that doesn't help because it takes you down to a lower level, you know, a lower bottom.
Yeah. You know, you'd mentioned a couple of things that I think are important. One is that, you know, the beauty of AA and NA is that there are so many different meetings out there, yeah, and you may find that, you know, you jive with one group versus another. So, you know, I definitely tell people to, you know, to keep looking. You know, if it doesn't feel right the first time, it may feel right, you know, at a different meeting, and they're going on everywhere all the time. But the other thing I felt, you know, is important is that, you know, people don't stop drinking or stop using for their wives. They don't stop doing it for their families. They do it for themselves first and Absolutely. Foremost. And they have to be ready for it, right? Because yeah, you can't walk into SVR or any other in-house treatment and expect to just get it, right? You got to put the work in. And I think that's where definitely all the fruit is. Because I was the same way when I went in. I was like, I've completely given up. I surrender, and I want this thing to be done in my life. You know, I want to get to the other side of this shore, if you will. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say you hit it 100%. Yeah, it's all what you put into it. And if you're doing it for something other than yourself, just like anything, that's going to fade at some point.
Yeah,
because it's all going to get good. And then you're still going to have your character defects in terms of, right, you know, what triggers you, what actions you take on that. So yeah, 100%. You got to be ready for it. You know, you got to hit step one and be good with it.
Yeah. What struggles have you found while trying to maintain your sobriety?
I think, like, in terms of my overall recovery, again, it was very, it's something I really wanted. And I remember how miserable I felt every time I went back to drinking. And the mental health stuff, we talked about that. Like, I'll tell you, drinking substances, they might help for a little bit. You might get that high. But that hurt, that despair comes back and bites you in the tail. And the only thing that you're going to lean on is another hit of something, you know? Since I've been out in the wild, my mental health's been really solid. And I don't say I don't ever get cravings or say, hey, I wish I could be a normie and enjoy a glass of wine with everyone. I mean, that's still with you. It's you know, I was a drinker all my life. So is it missed? In certain situations, yeah. I said I wish I wasn't like this, but I always go back to, there's a fine line that if you cross, right, you're going to lose everything you worked hard for. And you still remember what it was like when you didn't have what you have now. So that really kind of keeps me pretty solid. Socializing now around people, being around bars and stuff, it's gotten a lot easier. But I'll tell you that's something I always like. I don't like going to wineries and hanging out with people that are tasting wine and, you know, where I used to love doing that. So, if, you know, if we're not playing games or something about the way, even when I'm, you know, you got a good cribbage mat, I love cribbage, you know, sitting there listening to music, I can tolerate it for a couple hours. But when let's order another bottle of wine, everyone's happy and I'm like, it's time to go. And I give myself that out, you know, and I don't feel bad about it, you know. But I'm usually the designated driver now. So when I say I'm out, we're out.
Hey, you know, and self-care is so important, right? With this newfound, with sobriety. And, you know, I guess, you know, the question then becomes with now that obviously, you know, when you remove drinking any substance use out of your life, you're freed up with all this time, right? Mm-hmm. So what's the routine, the daily habits that you found that have helped you?
No, that's really good. That's a great, great, great question to throw out. I still keep most of the time, my daily habit that I learned in rehab. And, you know, you probably remember this, where we sat in the first group and we set a SMART goal. We did some readings. And then everyone announced their days. Now I've fallen off the days, like I said, you know, like I still update them, but I got a little whiteboard in my office that I still, you know, whether I'm reading daily reflections or just for today, which is the NA, you know, book, I'll read it. I'll put the quote up there. I'll set a SMART goal, just to get dialed into my program. Okay. So the daily routines are certainly start with that, a little bit of praise and prayer. You know, I haven't quite gotten into the meditation thing. I enjoyed doing that. And then I'm kind of like, let's get to work, you know, because I got a busy job. I'm like, I love my job. And it's like, what are we going to tackle today? And then I always try to cook a meal at home. I love to cook. So I try to, you know, get a breather from work and start up dinner, enjoy that with my wife and, you know, work until I can tolerate it. I've been working a little too much lately, but always end with some TV with my wife. We like watching Netflix series, documentaries. That's kind of the daily routine. And then just mixing in time in the weekends to go out and do fun social things, go see my mom, who's still struggling. Yeah. And not getting any better with dementia. It's something that they, just don't have a cure for. It doesn't get better. It gets worse.
Right.
It's kind of it's a busy life for me. I don't have a lot of downtime where I'm sitting around waiting. And then if I ever do, like you see the guitars back here, I'm picking those up and starting to do some music because I love music, or I like fly fishing. So I'll tie some fly, just hobbies. You know, there's always time, there are always things to do when I need to fill time. So it's been pretty good that way. I'm lucky.
Well, that's good. Yeah. You know, I've had a lot of guests and a lot of friends in this whole journey that have said, that that creative side comes back out again in their lives. And, I think that I had a lot of creative avenues, and it was interesting that this whole brainchild of me doing this, it's really very satisfying to me now, this outlet creatively too. And it's also, I think it's a service that people need. I think that there's service. A lot out there.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. I mean, you found something that you like doing, keeping you busy, and it benefits you and others. Yeah. I mean, great.
Have you, is there any other like surprising realizations with being sober that, because, you'd been in it for so long that it's almost like a new aspect of you that maybe you'd forgotten even existed?
Just how easy it is to enjoy the day and how enjoyable a day can be. And I had good days. I'm not saying my life was miserable before I stepped into the rehab center, but it wasn't sustained in a wake up in the morning, stretch, have your coffee and give a smile, right? It's really cool. Kind of, it can be the most uneventful day, but still enjoying it and finding ways to enjoy it. It's been a real eye opener for me.
Nice.
It feels like I'm a kid again, in my safe circle, not outside in an anxious world, but I'm in my 50s. It's like, I'm hoping I'm extending my life here with my recovery because I'm not abusing, putting poison in my body, certainly, health wise is gonna, be a good thing for me. You can never tell where you're going to go then, but it's kind of nice being, in my 50s and starting to just relax, breathe and enjoy each moment and be grateful for what I have and appreciate all the little things in life that make life pretty cool.
It is interesting how just having gratitude becomes so much easier to do when you're no longer in an addiction, right? Mm. Yeah. I found that very, very profound for me because, it used to be I was either high or I was in despair, and I'd always want to get myself back up to high, and that was I operated on two emotions, right? Whereas I allow myself to feel everything again and know that that's okay, but it's just – I just have okay days and okay is a good thing to me. Right.
It
and
is,
I'm thankful
nothing
for that.
Wrong.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
Right.
Right. Absolutely.
This is, typically I usually kind of combine these questions. So, gems of wisdom, or if you had a 30-second elevator pitch, somebody steps into your elevator and says, and just looks at you. Seems like you're somebody that that has a good ear. And they basically tell you, hey, I'm at my wit's end. I can't seem to control myself. This addiction's got the best of me and I'm afraid. I've got all this guilt and shame, but I'm afraid. What would you say to a person like that?
I think the first thing I would say is the fact that I can speak and they're hearing me means they're in the right place in terms of like they're doing something about it without any action other than that, right? Like that's such a huge thing, right? You're never going to get anywhere and this disease and abusing substances if you don't take a step forward and have that thought of, I want help. And that's just huge, right? If you're like, well, I think I drink a little bit, maybe I want to stop, so maybe I'll check it, but I'm not really going to commit, or my life's okay. You know, that's different than being in despair. But either way, if you're listening to, hey, how's someone doing this? You know, the fact that you're even listening to that conversation is huge, right? So hold on to that and let it carry you. The other thing is just like, it's a disease. When you're in it and you're abusing, you're using, you know, it's very lonely. And making a step forward in finding a fellowship, a community, a program, it doesn't matter what it is. There's a lot of options out there. 12-step, non-12-step programs, right? Getting, you know, embedded with people that are struggling with the same, with the hope of escaping from the misery of this disease, right, is gonna be everything. And be open-minded. It's not like you got to walk in and put your mask on and hey, I'm going to talk to everyone and meet this person because I'm not comfortable doing it. That's okay. Just sitting and listening, right? Eventually keep coming back, they say, right? A lot. And the reason why is it gets easier. You start not knowing anybody to that person looks familiar. Say, hey, you're back. That's good. What do you do? You know, and it's a slow kind of grind into, I suddenly feel, well, people know me, they're asking questions, right? And also to listen. I mean, God, the first, you know, meeting you go to when you start a recovery or restart a recovery, like you want all this help and you just, you want to talk it out and get help, right? It's natural. But, you know, listening is kind of where you get all the thoughts in your head to start putting together, wow, that person just like me, or, oh, that sounds terrible, but that person's still here, you know? And those thoughts start, and then you start sharing yours and learning from what others have said. And next thing you know, you got a lot of wisdom and you're starting to spread that out, connect with someone in that meeting that's listening to you and helping them out.
Was there anything else that you wanted to talk about regarding recovery and how somebody's going to go about it?
Just kind of what I was just saying is, like, if you're seeing this or listening, you know, great. That's huge. Take some time, roll into it, be patient, don't give up. It's a tough one. I mean, we all struggle with a lot of things that bring us into using, to help usually make us feel better. And there's a better way. So if you put the work in, like they say, stick with it, it's gonna come back in a good way to you.
Yeah, very good, sir. Well, hey, I appreciate your time, bud. Okay, and I'll be seeing you soon, either on the alumni meeting or maybe I'll go head out with you again one of these weekends soon. Okay.
You're gonna be at the NA this Sunday.
Yeah.
All right, I'll see you there because Tony from the center is speaking, and
Tony's coming out to Livermore.
He is. He's coming out to Livermore Sunday, so I'm gonna show up. For that. I'll see you.
That is awesome. That's the one at 6:30, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Well, that's wonderful. And hey, you know, I wanted to, you know, do a dedication to this show because I'm not sure if you were made aware, but Priscilla Wiltz passed away, one of the counselors at SVR.
Oh no. That's sad to hear.
Yeah. I think she was only 36. I'd like to dedicate that show to her, and with that, I'm going to say goodnight to you, sir. You take care. Okay.
Yeah. Thanks, Dustin, for having me. Really appreciate it. And everyone out there. Yeah. Love you. Hang in there and keep on doing the work.
Thanks, bud. You too. Take care.